This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. It is Lee Chui Lin alongside Kelvin Yee and Ayman Rashad. Our next story is about a baby country, potentially a newborn. this is after the region of Bougainville voted to become independent from Papua New Guinea, which will make them the world's newest nation.
Yeah, so 98% of Bougainvillians voted in support of becoming an independent nation in a referendum that is linked to a peace agreement 20 years ago between them and Papua New Guinea. And with such overwhelming support for independence, experts have said that, you know, it would be difficult for Papua New Guinea to delay Bougainville's independence.
Now that this new country has the potential to become the world's newest nation, they have the opportunity to define their own future and engage in diplomatic and economic relations with other nations. But they will also need to think about how they want to set up their institutions and system of government.
Yeah, I was really excited about the story because I think that we spend a lot of time talking about how things have become the way they've become, right? And that is not just about our country, but anywhere else, for good or for bad, right? When you look at the successes, you think, man, what led you there? And when you look at a country that perhaps feels a little bit stuck, you also think, well, what led you there? And Bougainville, I just feel, have this opportunity. And they're in a particularly interesting interesting part of the world too. I mean, Ayman, you were talking about that peace agreement. And so it's this push for independence has been something that isn't new to Bougainville. I think it's something that they have been asking for. It is something that has arisen out of tensions in the past. They are also a mineral-rich region. So I think Papua New Guinea was, well, understandably, I think a little bit reluctant to say like, yeah, go on, make your own money. And I also think because of where they are and their proximity to countries such as Australia and New Zealand, it's going to be interesting to see them kind of reach out and establish relations and business ties and trade ties and funding ties with those larger countries and to watch how Australia and New Zealand also have to balance that alongside well, Papua New Guinea perhaps not being super happy about having to give them independence.
Yeah, I mean, as a new country, it's important from the get-go to sort of establish your legitimacy, right? So that can be achieved by establishing relationships with sort of major powers or more influential countries around the world. And the fact that they are mineral-rich is something that they need to be wary of, that some countries might want to take advantage of that. We provide you legitimacy at the same time, you know, give us some of that minerals. And I think experts have pointed to how maybe the US and China will sort of like fight over influence in that area, in that region. So it's an interesting development to look at and how they sort of navigate that side of things in the future. The politics of it, the economics of it is what will make or break them as a country moving forward.
Yeah, because when you were saying that, I was also thinking, I mean, like we alluded to earlier, I think they're surrounded by larger nations. It's not as if they sort of exist with other minis. So that's, I think, an interesting point. Also, that point about legitimacy, I wonder whether there are alliances and allegiances that need to be formed or, you know, even just being able to participate in an in a regional bloc, whether that would be something that would be helpful. I don't know. It's just very exciting to me because it's, while there are so many very particular challenges for Bougainville, it also feels like the opportunity to kind of set your own tone, right? Like how you want to proceed. Yeah, so it's just, it's a cool case study. And we are going to be talking about that after this, what it means to be a brand new nation. You can call us with your thoughts, 7733-2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us on the line is constitutional lawyer Surendra Anand. Surendra, always good to have you with us on the show. So how often are new countries formed?
Okay, so I think that depends a lot on the scenario. But just to go back to basics, there are certain requirements for any country to be considered a state in international law. In total, there are four requirements. One is obviously you need to have a territory. Second, you need to have a permanent population. Third, you need to have a government. And fourth, you need to be able to enter into relationships with external organizations and other states. So essentially what that means is you need to be independent to be ordered to enter into external relationships. So if you comply with these four requirements, then in international law, you would be considered a state. So that's the legal requirement. While there is a school of thought that recognition by other states as a state is also a requirement, there's a different school of thought that is not required. But in reality, obviously, in my view, you need to also have that sort of recognition by other states. Or else it's no point that you self-declare yourself to be a state, but if no other states recognize you as an independent state, then there really is no point.
Yeah, because like without recognition, even something like traveling to and from different countries will be a complete nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. And especially, I guess, the issue becomes even more nuanced or complex. If you're already part of an existing state, and if you want to sort of succeed or separate out of the state, there's a whole lot of issues there. But for example, if you are just going to buy over some empty territory, move there with a bunch of people and proclaim independence and say, now we're a new state, I suppose you could do that and you could survive. But at the end of the day, I mean, to put it very bluntly in the layman language, it'd be like a shock and serious situation. But so, well, you could have your own immigration laws and you could have your own policies, but in order to properly function as a state, I suppose you still need to depend on international organizations and other states for purposes of trade, economy, so forth and so on. So to that extent, insofar as you need to depend on other states to ensure your survival, then recognition is a key consideration.
What have been the reasons for a new country to come into being? Is it always born out of conflict?
Yes, I think historically speaking, it has always been conflict-related. So I think like the clear examples are the former Soviet Union and how that breakaway happened. Another list is all the countries that were colonized previously, for example. Most of the scenarios, you can see heavy conflict. Recent examples are Kosovo, and I guess current examples going on states trying to gain independence, Catalonia and Spain, for example. I think in Iraq, there's also a movement. I think it's Kurdistan, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not entirely sure. But these are the examples, and quite normally they are involved in conflict purely because the host state or the state that they were part of would normally not recognize the independence of this particular group. And then that gives rise to the conflict.
And is that what typically creates these roadblocks for a territory or a population to gain independence?
Yes, exactly. So that is the one that normally gets in the way. So usually how it's done is, in cases of colonization or where a minority group is being oppressed, international law is a bit clear on that. So historically speaking, if it's a colony or if a minority group is getting oppressed, then there is what you call a right to external self-determination. So that particular group in international law will have the right to succeed and be recognized as an independent state. But it gets a bit more murky when it's not a case of colonization or oppression. So in that respect, the right to succeed or remove yourself from an independent state is a very gray area. And as of now, there is no established principle or criteria to whether any group of people can just proclaim that, oh no, we want to get out and establish a new state.
So looking at countries that have successfully become independent states, right, what happens during the early stages of its formation?
So usually that the main issue is at the beginning is trying to get recognition from other states, like which states would support the movement to succeed, or which state would then support the host state sort of using force to get that state to remain with them. So that's sort of the struggle that they start off with, usually, to try and get more support from especially United Nations organizations. So although, as I said earlier, recognition legally is not a criteria, but practically, in reality, it is an important aspect. And normally, membership in the UN or other international organizations carry very heavy weight in terms of international recognition. So that's usually the first stumbling block or where states will try and push, which is trying to get recognition from as many states as they can.
With a body like the UN, is there any sort of framework that they use to recognize the sovereignty of a country?
Well, I'm not entirely sure, actually. That's a good question. I presume normally you submit a membership, and I think it's up to the Secretary General, or I think it's put to vote to the UN General Assembly usually. And I suppose then you'll get into the UN. That's one way. But you also have other international organizations. So take Hong Kong, for example. There's a lot of debate on whether Hong Kong can be considered a state in international law because of China's influence, etc. So while China does control certain aspects of Hong Kong's external relations, Hong Kong in itself does have some autonomy in terms of certain aspects of it. They are members of certain international organizations, though not the UN. So, for example, there's been a lot of debate going on. Some people would call Hong Kong a quasi-state, for example. I think the point is that there's really a lot of gray area in this particular topic at the end of the day. And it's very hard to provide an objective yardstick to determine whether an entity can be called a state in law or not. And when you talk about international recognition, membership in the UN, it becomes very political rather than legal.
So, you know, constitutions and other similar documents usually form the backbone of how a country makes policy, forms its government. Who is usually involved in that and how does it all come together?
Well, so in the usual course, I think the state that wants the entity that wants to form a new state would usually have a basic document ready on how to govern itself. And I suppose that's something they would have prepared before that. Proclaiming their independence is something they also normally do. If it's a peaceful process, I think like Bougainville, if I'm pronouncing correctly, you already have like a referendum in place, for example, in a certain number of years, depending on the referendum, you then get independence. But in the usual course, the basic documents will always be ready. As I said earlier, the one that's normally going to be the difficult part of it is obviously putting it in place, the relevant institutions, the relevant authorities, and more importantly, trying to get international recognition and support.
And one last question. Can a country status be taken away?
No, there is no international body that sort of determines, okay, now you're a state or you're no longer a state. As I said, you have the UN and you have other international organizations, but this only counts for political recognition. It is not a determinative body of whether you're a state or not a state. So in that sense, if you fulfill those criteria that I mentioned earlier, legally you're a state. But I think the question is, how does that help? Or is the fact that you're recognized as a state in law mean anything? So for example, in order to be a chair, you need, I don't know, four legs, whatever, and you're a chair. That's a very simple analysis of how in international law one considers you to be a state. If you fulfill this criteria, you're a state. And logically speaking, if you lose one of those criteria, you're no longer a state in international law. So just to give an example, let's say if you lose your government, and if you're taken over by another state, for example, you're no longer independent, you're colonized again. Then in international law, I would say that perhaps you're no longer recognized as a state. Or, for example, you lose your entire territory. That's another scenario where you might no longer be a state. So in those scenarios, what they say is you might be dissolved or no longer recognized as a state. But those scenarios are quite rare.
Surendra, thank you so much for those insights. You just heard Surendra Anand, constitutional lawyer, giving us a breakdown of what it takes for a new country to not just be born, but then to thrive and to function. If you have thoughts on Bougainville becoming the world's newest nation, call us at 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Rose says, Bougainville's independence sounds like a thorny issue.
The pun is much appreciated.
Yeah, I think the minute we saw the country's name, it was like, oh, you know.
The flowers?
It's quite lovely. I think it's a really, really nice name.
Yeah, when you hear Bougainville, imagine like, oh, it must be a peaceful, flowery place. So beautiful.
One hopes. And then we have Crazy Horses back to say, not if Australia has a say in Bougainville's independence. Australia loses most in the mineral hegemony in Bougainville, but this independence will be great for the rest of the world.
Yeah, it will be a tough start, I think, for them, because right now they only have an estimated 56% of the revenue that they need to be self-reliant. It's going to be a long battle ahead, and it's also going to be, not long battle, but a very uphill and steep hill for them to climb. But really, I hope, you know, all the best for them.
I'm interested to see what kind of diplomatic ties and feelers that they start to put out. I am weirdly invested in the success of Bougainville, so you can expect updates on the show. If you have thoughts to share, like I said, that number, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.